Welcome home. We are WNST, Dallas and Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a homestand. And folks getting down to the ballpark here this week, whether it's the Braves next couple days, Phillies this weekend. We're getting out in the community. We're going to be at Coco. Stop by before the game. By all means, pretend you're going to Memorial Stadium. Just come down to Coco's. Get a crab cake with us. We'll be there on Wednesday. And then on Friday, we're going to be down at Cooper's Tavern. The original, across from Pendry on the square and the cobblestone down at Fells Point. Looking forward to that. Ron Furman's going to stop by from Max's. So be telling some rock and roll stories. Had Mark Bryan from Hootie and the Blowfish, who's a huge Orioles fan, drop by. His band is out on the road this week or this summer. So a lot of things happening. The Maryland Lottery throwing me out on the road. This is the last time you'll probably see the Pac-Mans because I'm going to have the Gold Rush Sevens by the end of the week. Maryland Lottery putting us out on the road for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I'm wearing my Costas shirt. We will be there next Thursday. If you hate the Yankees, who hates the Yankees? Ooh, me. We'll be in Dundalk at Costas next week, hating up on the Yankees. I just hope Nestor Cortez is pitching because I like to hear Jim Palmer just say my name out loud. It puts a twinkle in my eye. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping our water clean, as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare, putting us on the road. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that when Luke Jones joins me at 5 a.m. to do these segments, after laboring deep into the night with Orioles baseball when the games end at 9 o'clock, it's sort of perfect for me becoming a senior citizen and getting my AARP. It is nice to wake up with coffee in my cold roofing mug, courtesy of our friends at Royal Farms for keeping it real fresh and real fast. And I don't have any fried chicken to hold up at this point, but I do have some delicious cookies here from the Woodley Bakery. So there's a free plug for you guys at Woodley because your chocolate chippers are good. What's going on, man? They don't lose, do they? I mean, they never lose. I mean, like, I don't know how often we said St. Louis, but that was so 2 weeks ago. This is an amazing baseball team. And as a guy standing locked out watching it on TV, you're there. You couldn't be there Tuesday night. Your sister's going to be giving birth to another little Jones Papoose for you. But this is an exciting thing to have this team come back playing baseball like this. And look, the Phillies fans are going to fill it up this weekend. I don't have any doubt about that. But this team's great.
I mean, and they need to be, right? Because the New York Yankees aren't losing games either. I mean, that's really what we're talking about here. I mean, we're talking about, I mean, the Orioles now are what, 22 over, 667 winning percentage, and they're in second place. And it really just speaks to what kind of division race this is. So I think it's really a credit to them on Tuesday when you kind of consider the variables. And we talked about this a couple days ago, but you finished this AL East road trip, you know, one stop in Toronto. And of course, they were down in St. Petersburg, a weird wraparound weekend series that ended on Monday night, not Monday afternoon. Keep in mind, the Braves had been in D.C., so they actually enjoyed some rest and relaxation in Baltimore and were waiting for the Orioles to return to town. You get the bad news about Danny Coulomb going to the IL, and we can certainly talk about that because that's a concern, depending on the severity with left elbow inflammation. This pitching staff's overworked just from the sense of not having off days. And lo and behold, they go out there against one of the best pitchers in the National League, left-handed pitchers in Max Fried. And Jorge Mateo comes off the IL, three-run homer. Albert Suarez gives them another really rock-solid start. Or he's just been, you know, whether it's been in relief or in a starting role, he's been
Venezuelan. I'm pointing that out. I just got to throw that in.
He's Venezuelan. He's been a godsend for them. One of their unsung heroes. Where we've talked about this, those guys that you're not expecting any contributions from at the beginning of the season, but knowing if you want to do anything special, you're going to need those contributions along the way. We've talked about that with Jacob Webb. Talked about that with Suarez. You know, to a lesser extent, Cole Irvin, because I think Cole Irvin was expected to be on the team and expected to contribute, but he's been better than anyone would have anticipated.
Yeah, he was expected to be painfully mediocre.
Yeah.
That was our expectation for him, right?
Yeah, you expected him to be your five starter or your swingman in the bullpen, and you look at his ERA.
And you would expect Suarez to be painfully mediocre, even but less than that, because he was thought to be less than that. And all of these guys just keep stepping up. I mean, it's... And the top of the rotation this week specifically, all the concerns we had last week when they're putting Means out, they're putting Wells out. We're talking about Kramer, when's he coming back and all that. Bradish takes a deep breath and then comes back, almost throws a no-hitter. Rodriguez almost throws a no-hitter. As I'm wearing my Costa shirt, I was over there cracking crabs on Sunday afternoon with that. And then Burns goes out Monday and shoves. It's almost, you know, I get Leo Mazzoni on here. He'll tell you what those cats were like when they were golfing together down in Atlanta and night at. And while the Braves are here, let's shove it at them a little bit. But this is what that looks like. And I don't know that it's sustainable, dude. I mean, I don't know that Suarez and I don't know that they're going to win 16 games and have ERAs that are sub three and make it the rest of the way and make 24 starts this year, 28. Like, I don't know, but I don't know who's coming over the hill that's going to look better than they've looked lately or in totality, just the where they are. They all look like they're ready to take the ball every fifth day and not ready to go back to Norfolk or the South Korean League or whatever you would want to say about Suarez. He's a guy, though, that when you and I were running around down Sarasota and I was doing hot yoga and they were letting you in, Elias talked about Suarez a lot, right? Like, I mean, he was one of those guys that he made noise enough in March to think that you could be talking about him in June. He's a pitcher, but you thought it might have been in a relief role.
Yeah, and it still could be that at some point later on in the season. I think Albert Suarez is just one of those guys that they identified. They signed him late last year, and they worked, and they tweaked some of his mechanics, and you know, he added a little bit of life to his fastball. And, I mean, he's just been really, really good. Now, you know, you look at some of the peripherals, and, you know, at times, does he walk a guy or two more than you'd prefer? Sure. I mean, he hasn't been perfect, but considering the expectations, he's been – I mean – I think he's fifth on the club in innings. I mean, that right there tells you something. One, what he's done, that he's pitched enough that they've kept him around. And two, it speaks to some of the physical concerns they've had with their pitching. And yet they haven't missed a beat. I mean, look at where they are right now. As they were going into Tuesday's action, you know, I've really been kind of just looking at runs per game and runs allowed per game. Going into Tuesday night's game, led the major leagues in runs scored per game. They were fourth best in runs allowed per game. So their pitching is getting it done, even if it looks unconventional, even if, to your point, you ask the question, is it sustainable? I think everyone in baseball is asking that at this point in time. Even the Yankees, with the rotation that they've already had, with Gerrit Cole coming back here in the near future, there are still questions whether it's going to last until October. I don't think the Orioles are unique in that way, and that's why I think Mike Elias is going to continue to scan the market and see what's out there bullpen-wise or potentially adding another starter. But these guys are getting the job done. And look, is Albert Suarez going to pitch – meaningful games in September and October? I can't sit here and say that I have any idea if that's going to happen, but he's pitched in some meaningful spots for them in the first half of the season, and all those games still count at the end of the day. So it really is impressive when you get the contributions you've gotten from him. Cole Irvin is what, third on the team in innings? He has a sub three ERA. I mean, again, if you look at the peripherals, you say, okay, well, these guys aren't striking out a ton of people, whatever. I hear that, but they're getting the job done and they're getting the results and they're doing it at times where there have been some health struggles. So you made the point, and I wrote about it at BaltimorePositive.com. One of the really cool things about that Rays series, other than just the fact that they swept and won four in a row, was it was the first time that we saw the Orioles in any given order, Corbin Burns, Kyle Bradish, Grayson Rodriguez, all pitching back to back to back. That's one of the first things fans thought about when the Orioles acquired Corbin Burns from Milwaukee back in early February, 2 weeks before the start of spring training. And to see those three pitch in a row, well, there's the upside. There's the makings of your postseason rotation. But guys like Cole Irvin and Albert Suarez and Jacob Webb in the bullpen, those are the kind of guys that are going to get you, help get you to that point for then the big boys to pitch in October and be the top three in your rotation. So, you know, it's a collective effort. You know, the bullpen now without Danny Coulomb, at least for the next 2 weeks, you hope it's not more severe than that. Brandon Hyde, you know, was noncommittal about it. He said he's undergoing some testing. They're hoping for the best. You know, he kind of felt it in his elbow when he was playing catch the final day in St. Petersburg. So, you know, that would be potentially a big loss, because we know how big Danny Coulomb has been in that bullpen the last 2 years. But in the meantime, you keep playing the games. You don't stop the season, right? It truly is next man up, as much as that expression is become such a cliche to the point where it annoys me, but there's truth to it. You're not going to stop or pause the season. So that's why it's just that much bigger when you get Albert Suarez going out there and throwing, getting into the sixth inning and not allowing any runs. It's that simple. I mean, again, the walks, the pitch count got him a little bit at the end, but he pitched well enough to throw 97 pitches early in the season when they first call him up. You don't even know if he's going to be the quality of pitcher that you want to be out there for 97 pitches. So again, it just speaks to what he's done, and it also speaks to what the organization did in terms of identifying him, even though he had been cast away and pitching over in the Far East and hadn't pitched in the majors since what, 2017. For him to do what he's done and to do it once again on Tuesday night on a day where the Orioles were tired. And oh yeah, Nestor, I didn't even mention Gunnar Henderson got the night off, didn't play, and they still get the job done.
How's he going to be Lou Gehrig like that? How are we going to pay him full money when he's load managing and it, whatever they call it in the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, it took him until what, the 66th game of the season to finally sit down. I mean, it's not quite Cal Ripken, but hey, Gunnar Henderson, he's entitled to a
Will
day
he
off.
play? 157? Is that will be the number? 155? What'll it be?
I mean, knock on wood, short of some kind of a physical ailment. I mean, yeah, he's going to be 158, something like that. I mean, a lot of it's going to depend on what happens at the end of the season. Where are they with the division? Where are they with the wild card, all of that. If they're in a position where they clinch and they can't improve their standing with 3 days to go, he'll probably take 2 games off then, right? So, but yeah, all these factors that we talked about, Tuesday was not a game where you'd look at it on paper and say that the Orioles had their best shot of winning, and they go out and win a ball game, and they win a ball game relatively easy, so easily. So it's very. It goes back to your original point. This is a really, really good baseball team, and just seems like we talked about all last year that they hit some bumps in the road and they either just overcome them or they rebound very quickly. And we've seen that now after the ending of that Toronto series where they dust themselves off and now they've won five straight again.
Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. You can find him out on the interwebs, anywhere, Instagrams follow, of course, out at BaltimorePositive.com, as well as AM 1570, where hopefully you're listening and setting a dial for us as we get into the summer here. So a couple things. I'm geezing a little bit. It's Father's Day week. I know how much you loved your dad. I love my. It's one thing we share. We lost our fathers. We were both pretty young when it happened. And so this week I had Ed Miller on from Classic Five Golf up at Pine Ridge. We're talking about he spends every Father's Day watching the U.S. Open with his dad. He's a golfer. He's a golf pro. It's what they do. Pinehurst this weekend. So you can go check that out as well. So on behalf of my dad, I've brought him up a couple of times this summer because you and I have been actually stat nerding, which is like, look, the last 15 years, you've been all analytical. You give me ish when I mention how many wins a pitcher has, but I think it's still a barometer. It's a measurement point that's old school that doesn't mean as much as it used to. It never meant that much then, quite frankly. Maybe it meant something to Phil Regan, who would come in and vulture victories at the end of games back when you could pitch three innings in the middle of a game and do such thing. Stats and history, and I brought up the Braves and the big pitchers. So if my dad came back tomorrow, and I do want to point out my 25th anniversary, a plug for Curio and Foreign Daughter here this week on Father's Day, that we did this 25th anniversary documentary, and there's one line in it, and there's literally only one image in the whole thing of the scoreboard page and the box scores and the standings. And I've told Luke many times, we joked about this 2 weeks ago because the young kids don't know what the loop leaders were. And I put all that together. But the one thing I never told you I did, and Rick Vaughn would absolutely second this because he was on the phone at 3:30 in the morning from Oakland or Seattle with Ken Rosenthal and Jim Henneman back in the 80s, is that in the middle of the night doing the Evening Sun, I had to manually input the stats. So if Tippy Martinez got a save, 2.1, 2 1/3 innings, 2 hits. I would literally manually update those stats for the paper because they didn't have like, this is 1987. There weren't like instant, Elias Sports updated them weekly, but to get it to the morning paper, I had to literally go in and say, Alan Wiggins 1 for 3 and add it. whoever was on the team, Bill Ripken, Cal Ripken, Bill Swaggerty, I'm making that up, but the late 80s. So I did that every day. I don't get a newspaper anymore. I don't look at the Orioles stats in totality every day. I look at it on my phone and box scores, and it's mainly the hitters, rarely the pitchers. You know, I just see like, oh, Rodriguez is in the fourth. He's given up 6 hits, 2 runs. I'll just look at the, and I let it go. And I don't look at every box score anymore because I don't get a newspaper, and I don't do it the way I did it the first 35 years of my life, right? So today is the first day that I'm going to fully admit that I've looked at the Orioles pitching stats in totality since late April. So I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, if your dad came back today and said, I'm going to watch the rest of summer Oriole baseball with you, Luke, my dad came back, and they'd say, how's the team doing? I hear they're really good. And I wouldn't have to mention names, but I'm just pitchers. Yeah, Dad, our ace is 7-2 with a 2.08 ERA, and he's thrown 86 and two-thirds innings. I mean, like, that's Jim Palmer stuff, right? Yeah, our number two starter, and he's like sort of the young guy, the young gun, only thrown 63 innings, but he's 7-2 with a 3.27, and he's made his turns. The sort of cagey left-handed guy that we thought was the fifth starter, he's not the fifth starter because the third starter's gone and the fourth starter's out. And the guy that we were sort of counting on, the other cagey left-hander who threw no hitters, who had Tommy John, he's gone too. But we got this guy. He's thrown 62 innings, 6-2 with a 2.87 ERA. I don't need to give you hits, right? I can give you all that. But just if we're just talking to our dads because they like these sort of numbers. What about our four starter? Well, he's been injured a little bit. You see if he comes back. He's only 3-4 with a 4.32, which sounds like every fourth or fifth starter in the history of baseball. And then we've had this Venezuelan sensation, not named Aparicio or Nestor, who's somehow in his mid-30s found the Jamie Moyer fountain of youth. And he's thrown 44 innings. He's 3-0 with a 1.61. Wayne Garland stuff. Like, crazy numbers, right? And we haven't even mentioned Bradish, who was our best pitcher last year. I don't know whether to call him a one, a two. I don't know what the hell he is in this thing. He's a question mark because he's been injured. He's only thrown 34 innings, some of them no hit. And he's got a 2.62 ERA. This has been the rotation. And if you don't mention any of their names, Burns, Rodriguez, Irvin, any of the names in any of this, Means even made a couple starts, but it's otherworldly. It's McNally, Cuellar, Dobson. I don't know what to say about these kinds of pitching numbers from starters, innings, given injuries, given the fact that it's not five guys or six guys. I just gave you eight guys, right, total, that have been involved in this. Only seven are going to continue or six are going to continue. I didn't throw Povich in there. But these are the kind of numbers that if you go back to the Mariners in 01 or any of the great Yankee teams, any of the teams that had great pitching, pick any team in the last 30 years that had three, four really good pitchers. They didn't have to be Maddox and Glavine and Smoltz. And, you know, it doesn't have to be that. This is extraordinary, let alone Gunnar Henderson and Ryan. Forget the bats. Forget Westbrook. Forget all of that. Calzers, they had old Cal section out there. These stats are gaudy, bro.
Yeah, and I mean, really, you need to look at it in the aggregate because bullpen guys throw more than ever. One thing that, you know, as we're doing this exercise and talking about it, this to our respective fathers, but Corbin Burns is the only one that's on pace to sniff 200 innings, right? I mean, Grayson Rodriguez at this point, I mean, he'd have to get on an absolute roll and they'd really have to take the governors off, so to speak, for him to really get high up there in, you know, 170, 180, whatever it would ultimately be. Same with Cole Irvin. So,
all by design.
Right. Well, right. Partly by design, but, you know, Grayson Rodriguez, he would have been someone that if he didn't have the shoulder issue, which cost him, what, 3 weeks? I mean, that he might have been in that conversation. He might have been on the heels of Burns in terms of innings, but he wasn't. So, but yeah, you look at it in the aggregate, you look at that as far as what they've done. That's why I said to you in looking at this, just from a league-wide perspective and just looking at this in terms of strictly speaking runs allowed per game, The Orioles were fourth going into Tuesday's game, and that's before they tossed the shutout. So they've been really, really good. Yes, we've focused on the bats, and rightfully so, when you're leading the league in home runs and slugging, and you've got a bona fide MVP candidate. You have a slam dunk all-star catcher. You have two other guys in Ryan Mountcastle and Jordan Westberg who are at least going to be in the all-star conversation at their respective positions. So, yeah, you're going to focus on the offense. There's no doubt about that. But Corbin Burnes has been everything they could have envisioned when they acquired him back in early February. And I get it. No, an ace in 2024 isn't what an ace was in 2010, which isn't what an ace was in 1997.
Still has the same value.
Which Mike Mussina was not what an ace was in the way that you thought about what Jim Palmer was as an ace. I mean, there's always the evolution and just how the game has changed. And again, it's not to debate whether that's good or bad. It's just understanding where you are in history. But he's been fantastic. And yeah, Cole Irvin has been so big for them. And Albert Suarez has been so big for them because, again, those were very fringe type contributors, you know, more so Suarez. But again, Cole Irvin, if you had told me back in March that he'd be what he's doing, you know, that he would do what he's doing right now, I would have been surprised because I would have told you if everything was going well, Cole Irvin would be the long man in the bullpen. You know, if John Means and Kyle Bradish were both healthy and not just one of them, and, you know, Tyler Wells was still in the mix. Again, I thought Wells would have been a bullpen guy over the long haul of the season. But for Cole Irvin to do what he's done, and look, in terms of real time, is he actually their number three starter? No, of course not. You'd still, you know, it'd be Burnes, Bradish, Rodriguez, in whatever order you want. But in terms of innings, in terms of contributions, in terms of consistency, in terms of think about that stretch a few weeks back where he was actually in the bullpen at the start of this long stretch with no off days or very few off days. And, you know, he had a period of time there where he didn't know when he was going to throw. And yet he seamlessly has moved back into the rotation and has pitched really well. I mean, these are things that you can't take for granted, especially in this day and age, especially understanding the fragility of pitchers' health being at an all-time high. When you have guys that can do that, one, you want to take care of them as much as you can, and that's why they've gone to a six-man rotation. That's why they pushed Kyle Bradish back a couple days last week, even though that created some fan angst. I think they knew what they were doing there, and we'll see if Kyle Bradish or any pitcher holds up over the long haul. That's what makes this so, it can make it so fleeting. That's why I enjoy this, because you just don't know. And we've talked about the example of what the Rays have become this year on the heels of all the pitching attrition and injuries that they endured last year. You just don't know, but in the present and where we are right now, which is approaching mid-June, I mean, we're 2.5 months into the 2024 season, their pitching's been terrific. And it's not going to get any easier. Case in point, going, you know, with the Phillies coming to town and then they're going to the Bronx next week, not having Danny Coulomb against some of those left-handed hitters you're talking about those two teams having, yeah, that's going to be a challenge, you know, and that's just hoping for the best case scenario of Coulomb just missing 15 days and being back. I mean, we don't know. We'll have to see what the testing looks like, but this team just finds a way, and it's such a credit to their talent and to their makeup. You know, I looked at this the other day. I said it, anytime they have a rough patch and you start to wonder, it starts to feel like the boat's starting to teeter or rock just a little bit, they right themselves so quickly. I mean, they have one three-game losing streak all year. Now, that was the three-game slide in St. Louis. But I think I went back and looked. I think they've only lost two straight, I think four other times all year. You know, we're rapidly approaching the midway point of the season, and they've been that consistent. And we talked about that all last year, and it's the reason why they were a 101 win team last year. So, you know, this is very rare. I made the point to you a few days ago when we were talking about where this team stacks up in terms of past Orioles teams in the regular season. October's a different conversation that we'll have when we get to that point. But I mean, you go back to 79 and 80, you go back to 69, 70, 71. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. This team, at least from a regular season standpoint, the kind of success they're having right now, the kind of pace that they're on right now. And I mean, I don't need to tell you, that's a long time ago. So it's a lot of fun.
One thing I was going to say to you on the stats side with the pitchers is that you like that fancy WAR stat, right? Wins above replacement, right? Replacement being the key word.
Yeah.
And when you start to take Batista innings out, you start to take Means innings out, you start to take Wells innings out, guys that they thought this time last year or over the last couple years, they've sort of waited on Means, believed in all of this, and they're going to replace those innings with a junk left-hander, Irvin, with a never has been 30-something, been all over the world, you know, right-hander that's right out of the major league, you know, casting, central casting. And you're going to put these guys in, and then you're going to have a guy who's got some arm problems, who was your number one last year that you're worried sick about, that you're going to try to make it go, you know, without cutting on him. And then Means goes, Wells goes, and you're like, Cade Povich is pitching. And by the way, the ERA, a little gaudy. I hope he gets it down. By the time you're listening on Thursday, I hope it's at least three digits at this point. We trust that it will be, but you know, he's the next one to step up, right? I mean, all of these guys are going to get the ball, and these are, it's above replacement innings. These are innings to replace what they were counting on Means to do, what they were counting on Kramer to do. And to your point and my point, how could it be any better? How could their stats for our fathers in their generation, this generation, any generation, you look at what we've seen from starting pitching from the team for whatever five innings it is, six innings it is, because it's not seven or eight anymore, and realizing the rest of that has to come from whatever the remnants of Danny Coulombe and all the rest of the Wells and the guys that aren't here anymore are going to have to soak that up as well. And that's where Elias and the trade and the depth of the organization and whether Norby was a showcase or whatever they're going to do to move players around in the organization to fortify the roster. We're 6 weeks out on that. But the starting pitching, that would have been a lot more bleeding to be thinking about, oh my God, Irvin's terrible. This kid Povich can't do it. We lost Bradish. I mean, like all of that's still on the table for July or August. That's all possible. But from where I sit here the first 9, 10 weeks of the season, it's remarkable, the starting pitching they've gotten, to your point, where I said to my wife, we're watching the game, like, this team's so good. This team's, I always say that. And I'm like, we've almost taken for granted real quickly, because there have just been years and years and years where they haven't had anything resembling anything like Corbin, like any of the top three guys, like any of these guys. You know, one Bedard once for a minute, you know, they just haven't had this kind of pitching organizationally, even when they were good in 12 and 14 and 16. It wasn't like this.
Yeah, I mean, they never had the upside in their rotation that they have with the t those top three, and I'm including Bradish in the top three, understanding he hasn't pitched as much, but we have enough of a sample size to know that if Kyle Bradish is healthy, he's a terrific pitcher. I mean, his strikeout rate is up this year. I looked at it. I get it. It's a very limited sample. You're talking 34 and a third innings, but his strikeout rate, where it stands right now, which is 12 something, it would lead the major leagues among qualified pitchers. I mean, that's how good his strikeout rate has been. So the stuff has been outstanding. It's just a question of, okay, is the elbow sound? How's he recovering? How's he feeling? How's he doing throwing a bullpen in between starts? And again, that's why we talked about with this six-man rotation and what they're trying to do here. If you need to give him a couple extra days, you give it to him. And that's why I said to you, I think I said it before Burns threw seven innings once again down at the Trop on Monday night, that if Corbin Burns needs an extra day or two at some point in time, you have to do it. I mean, you just have to do it.
Well, when you're 22
It's
games over
tough.
500, you don't have to win every night. And when this is where the pennant race part of being number two, and every time you bring up we're chasing the Yankees, all I think about is 1980, because I was 11 years
Yeah.
old, and we couldn't catch them, we couldn't get in, and you win 100 games, and you're really good, better than everybody except them, and you don't get to play in October. That's not the case.
Right.
And there is a point for me with Bradish where I think it's bubblegum and paper clips at this point. And any thought, Elias isn't thinking he's getting 28 innings out of Bradish in October and winning the World Series. I mean, I don't know that he thinks like that. I think he's thinking more along the lines of, we need Kyle Gibson, and now I lost my left-hander. Now I got to go get a BJ Ryan, Andrew Miller kind of left-hander, and I still need another right-hander to do whatever we thought Wells was going to do because we're not really sure we got that guy. And so, I mean, I still think they're going to add two or three pitchers. June 12th is my day we're recording this, Luke Jones, even if they hear it on the 13th or 14th. I believe they will deal for a starting pitcher. I believe they will deal for a left-hander. I believe they'll deal for a right-hander unless they find something here.
Right.
Unless Povich becomes the greatest thing ever and fits right in, because I don't think they can trust Bradish's arm, and I don't think you can. I'm not being disrespectful to my Venezuelan brother because, whistling ears would have me, but I don't know that the Suarez and Irvin experiments that we're going to get what we, the stats I just gave our fathers a minute ago. For father, I don't know that we're going to get that out of the next batch, the next sample size. I don't know that I'm going to be sitting here in August and, we're going to have sub three ERAs on those cats. I can't count on that, especially with the Yankees bats coming there. We're just getting into playing every day. All the things we've talked about, this pitching thing's very, very fluid, bro. And we're going to
Yeah,
be talking about it every other day all summer.
it is, and but again, I don't say this to be flippant about it because I agree with you. Every team's talking in those terms. I mean, they really are. Okay, the Yankees have a better starting rotation than the Orioles right now. I don't think I'm talking out of turn or being disrespectful to the Orioles in saying that, but I think they do. But at the same time, any team that's out there, I mean, look at the Braves right now. Nestor. I mean, just as we're in the midst of this series with Atlanta, what the start, Wednesday night's starting pitcher was listed as Spencer Schwellenbach. That's not Spencer Strider. I mean, seriously, I can't get a more blunt example than that in terms of just how fleeting this can be, where you lose your guy. I mean, to your point, talking about guys like Suarez and Cole Irvin to a lesser extent, but still, again, Cole Irvin exceeding expectations at the very least. Who in this rotation right now do you expect to continue doing what he's doing right now? Corbin Burns, yes. And you pray, right? Just because he's your ace, that nothing compromises his health. And he's been durable over the course of the last 4 or 5 years. That's why the Orioles traded him or traded for him because he's been so great. Grayson
It keeps
Rodriguez.
this up. This is why they would have to consider giving him $150 million. They'd have to consider it.
Well, 150 is, you're not even close, bro, on what he's going to get. I mean, that's not even in the, I don't think that's even in the ballpark as far as what he's going to ultimately get. Anyway, we'll have plenty of time to talk about that. But
Okay.
Corbin Burns, Grayson Rodriguez, yeah, you feel they're going, what they're doing right now, they're going to continue to do. Bradish, it's all about health. It has nothing to do with his ability at this point. Bradish is phenomenal. He's absolutely one of the best pitchers in the American League. He proved that last year. And for him to come back after, the sprained UCL and the uncertainty, and I don't know if he's going to make it to October. I don't know. No one knows that right now. But he's been terrific when he's pitched. I mean, there's been nothing diminished about him. Maybe the command hasn't been as on point as last year. Does that have anything to do with the elbow, or is it just that he had a disrupted spring and start to the season, which really matters, as we've seen with the likes of a Jordan Montgomery, who didn't have spring training, and look at how he's doing this year. I mean, that routine really matters. Put the health part aside, routine really matters for starting pitchers. But he's been outstanding. So I have no idea. I can't sit here and predict the future on any of these guys. But to your point, when you're talking about Suarez, when you're talking about Cole Irvin, Cade Povich, who knows? I want to see more from him, but it's got to be better, right? We talked about it. His first start, aesthetically, the box score, it looked really ugly. But I think if you actually watched the outing, I thought there was a lot to like, except for a couple pockets of that game where some command and a couple bad pitches to Vlad Guerrero Jr., which, by the way, he's been on fire the last 6 weeks. Other than that, there was a lot that I actually liked about him. So we'll see how this looks. But I'm in agreement with you in terms of I don't see Mike Elias standing pat, or I don't see Mike Elias letting the trade deadline pass and the best you're doing is Fujinami and Jack Flaherty this time around. I think you're going to need to fortify. And keep in mind, Dean Kramer, every expectation, he's throwing bullpens. He's going to be going on a rehab assignment soon. It's a triceps issue. It's not his elbow. It's not his shoulder. all indications are they fully expect him to come back. So he's going to fit into that picture somewhere, and that will certainly help. But yeah, you can easily persuade me to get on board in terms of adding another pitcher. Now, I'll say this much. You laid out the scenario of Mike Elias not necessarily expecting Kyle Bradish to be there come October, which I don't think he's necessarily thinking that, but I think you certainly have to plan for contingencies, right? You need to have all those contingencies in place. So the idea becomes, if Kyle Bradish does run into health concerns, or if it's Rodriguez, like, you know, I mean, let's just throw out the different contingencies that are out there, then yeah, you do need to aim higher in terms of adding another rotation piece. But for me, where things stand right now, I don't think it necessarily needs to be a guy that you say is, oh, he becomes our number two starter or he becomes our number three starter. You need someone who can give you innings and competitive innings and a chance to win every time they go out there. And I've just used Kyle Gibson as an example. You know, that kind of a guy, is that something that would, at a minimum, be attractive to them by the trade deadline to navigate the final 2 months, whether you're talking about the division, whether you're talking about having a wild card spot clinched, however it shakes out? Sure, no question. And again, on the bullpen, especially now with Danny Coulomb and the uncertainty there, they're going to have to add a couple bullpen arms. And I say that with no disrespect to what they have out there, but let's face it, let's call a spade here. And I'm not trying to diss them individually, but when Brian Baker's your replacement for Danny Coulomb, you need bullpen help in terms of not immediately, but in terms of thinking about September and October and what you want to have in the back end of that bullpen. And as I said to you, it's not just about Craig Kimbrell. It's not just about missing Felix Bautista. It's not just about Yennier Cano. It's not just about Danny Coulomb and whether or not he's going to be back and healthy and as effective as he's been the last 2 years. It's about having multiple guys that you really, really trust. I was having this conversation with someone the other day, you know, a big Orioles fan, someone who really knows baseball. And we were talking about the bullpen. And by and large, the way I would describe the Orioles bullpen, and look, statistically, the bullpen is way better than people give them credit for. You know, you see fans and people with angst on social media, you would think they have the worst bullpen in the league. And far from
it. Oh, man, you go through and see the ERAs are all sub three, sub four. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
they've been equally outs. They don't blow a lot of games around here.
I mean, the peripherals, would you like them to miss more bats? Would you like them to strike out more people? Would you like the inherited runner percentage to be a little bit better? Yeah, no question about that. It's not even close to being the best in baseball either. Let's be clear about that. But the overall description, you know, my qualitative description of this bullpen is, I think they've got a slew of guys that you feel really good about in sixth and seventh inning roles, right? Middle relievers, guys that, okay, you know, hey, sixth and seventh inning, close games, those are really important innings too. Let's be clear. But you have a slew of guys that I feel really comfortable using in those spots. However, when you're talking about a one-run game in the eighth inning and the ninth inning, that list that I really fully trust that's going to get the job done, it's short. I mean, it's much shorter there. And look, that's a lot of teams. Let's be clear about this. Now, I mean, not everyone has the kind of bullpen that, you know, Cleveland has, or talking about the Yankees with what they've had with Clay Holmes and some other guys in their pen. But that's where I look at this thing and say, can you add two relievers that, one is a guy that has either had some experience closing or is at least very capable of doing that on nights where Craig Kimbrell either isn't available or looks a little off, or Yennier Cano's not available. And do you have another?
You want to go top shelf with that? With that acquisition?
I want.
So
one,
you're looking for a fourth starter, a Gibson starter, and a legitimate step up to where we get somebody else, a bad team's closer, is what you're asking for.
Yeah, I mean, on a simplistic level, yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I'm looking for. And then another reliever that maybe isn't quite that.
Left-handed?
I mean, if Coulomb's not coming back, sure, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, no doubt. And keep in mind, Danny Coulomb got right-handers out too. I mean, we have to think about lefties differently now because
they can't go one to one.
Right. There's no
Kevin
longer
Hickey,
that loogie.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. What Brian Mattis was for the Orioles a decade ago, that left-handed one out guy, that doesn't exist anymore. So you need to have some lefties who can at least be competitive against right-handed hitters, even if you're going to look for that pocket in the lineup that might have three out of four batters that are swinging from the left side. So, but the other arm would be a lefty. And okay, maybe he's not a guy that I feel great about pitching in the ninth inning, but he needs to be a seventh and eighth inning guy, you know, a guy that's higher leverage. So, I mean, that's what I'm looking at here. And let's be clear, Nestor, that those, that shopping list right there, that's not going to be cheap. Now, I'm not saying you're going to have to trade Jackson Holliday for that, but you're going to have to give up something meaningful in your system to get that, a couple meaningful pieces in your system. But you just look at the makeup of this team. You look at where they stand. You look at the fact that, I mean, Gunnar Henderson's having an MVP season. Adley Rutschman is having a fantastic season. The number of guys top to bottom in their lineup that are just, you know, I guess, aside from Cedric Mullins, because, hey, even Austin Hayes had three hits on Tuesday night. And good to see him back in the lineup and continuing to swing the bat much, much better. But, you know, you just have such a great opportunity here. And you don't want to gut your farm system. But at the same time, we've talked a lot about this farm system and the guys that are at AAA right now who, you know, whether you're talking about Norby, whether you're talking about Heston Kerstad, you know, Kyle Stowers, when he's been sent down at various points over the last couple of years. I mean, you have guys that are ready to contribute either in Baltimore or somewhere else. So use that, you know, use some of those prospects to go out and augment this 2024 team. And let's be clear, you can go out and get a couple relievers who have team control beyond this year. You know, it doesn't have to just be a rental. You know, it's not every trade has to be what Corbin Burnes was, which was a rental, albeit an ace rental. Go out and augment. So it really, you know, we'll see what happens. And I feel like you could make a trade today. You can make a trade 2 weeks from now, or it could be 6 weeks from now, but they're going to have to add a couple pieces. I don't say that with the thought that this team isn't good enough as it's presently constructed. It's the thought of October and wanting to be even better. And whether it means you overtake the Yankees or whether it's just positioning yourself to be that much better in whoever you're playing in October. I mean, that's really where we are. But all that being said, go back to your original point. This team deserves all the credit in the world because, especially from the pitching side of things, and even the hitting, you know, with Jackson Holliday not working out immediately the way they thought it would, but especially on the pitching side with some of the challenges they've had, for them to pitch and perform the way they have in a division where the Yankees have just been on fire really since what, early May? You know, when you really look at the record since these teams played at Camden Yards, which is what now, 6 weeks ago, and to think where they are, but the Orioles are right there. You know, especially when you look at the loss column, having played a few less games. I mean, it's fun, and it's going to continue to be a really fun summer. And, you know, we'll see what happens in the Bronx next week. This weekend's going to be fun with the Phillies coming to town, and just knowing that could potentially be a 1983.
How are we doing next week that's keeping us out of New York, you and me? I mean, seriously. I mean, are you playing the role of Uncle Luke now? I mean, what's going on here? We should get on a bus and go up to New York on Tuesday and Wednesday. Let's go. Let's go to the Bronx. Let's do it.
You're springing this on me last minute here. But, I mean, it's going to be a big series. I mean, this is...
Well, I got to be at Costas at 1 o'clock on Thursday, but I don't want to miss big games in the Bronx. Let's go.
This is going to, you know, this next week, and even include the Braves, although they're certainly not playing as they have the last couple of years. I mean, look at some of their injuries.
Can I say this? We play in New York September 24th, 25th, and 26th. Just file that. After the Ravens play the Cowboys in week three, it doesn't matter, Luke. Look, we'll fight about this in September about winning the division and all that. But like, it does, but it doesn't.
You just said it. It does matter. You do want to be the number one seed if you can do it, or the number two seed
until you sit home and ice yourself, and then you can't pitch or hit 3 days later.
Or the alternative is you have one of these teams like Arizona last year who isn't all that good, but they get hot over the last 2.5 weeks of the regular season. They come into Camden Yards and they beat you twice in 30 hours and your season's over, even though you were 15 games better than that team in the regular season. So you can look at it either way. Your point is well taken, though. This isn't 1980 in the sense of If you don't win the division, you're going home. So, yeah.
Well, that's why I can't get all geeked up to go up to Yankee Stadium next week to get Tuesday, Wednesday games in June, because there'll be a big deal if we win three of them.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, and if they're in first place, then you'll be saying, oh, love the division.
Man, what a good time we had in New York. Wasn't that something up there?
But it's fun. It's fun because both these teams are really, really good. There's always a sense of thinking that your opponent, like, that you fear them or there's any – there's none of that. Let's be clear about that. But both these teams are really good, and that's why any of these – you know, you don't play them 19 times anymore. But any of these matchups, and you said this back in May when I was dismissive of it, important, exciting, meaningful games coming up here in the Bronx. But meanwhile, Orioles trying to take care of business against the Braves and Phillies coming in and some potentially enticing pitching matchups over the weekend. We'll talk about that later in the week as we get closer, but definitely going to see some good starting pitching, at least on paper, this weekend with the Phillies coming to town.
Well, I'm thinking about it as I ain't seen the Braves play a game all year. The Braves are in town. The Phillies are coming this weekend. Bring the cheesesteak eaters down here. I didn't make it to see the Stones the other day, but I did spend some credible time in Philadelphia over the weekend with Thomas Conwell and the Young Rumblers. So they'll all be coming down. Sold out Saturday. Sold $80 to sit in the bleachers on Saturday night. You know the Phillies are bringing those cheesesteaks and those pretzels down here. So you'll see the red around town. You will see the planes up in the sky. It is Maryland Fleet Week this week. We've been promoting that. We'll be at Cooper's Tavern in Fells Point on Friday. I probably won't be giving away the Pac-Mans. I'm going to have the Gold Rush 7s by the time we get here on Friday, thanks to Roz and John at the Maryland Lottery. We're going to be at Coco's on Wednesday with Rasig and Max Weiss. There's a rumor that Alan McCallum's stopping out and Tom Pierce from Classic Five, who's one of those Philadelphians. So we're going to talk to him about Mike Schmidt and Pete Rose, and maybe I'll bring my 1983 World Series pictures, bust those out this weekend, have a good time with that. He is Luke. He is Baltimore Luke. He will be covering the Ravens all week. He'll be covering the Orioles all week because neither one of them let me in because I'm a bad guy. But the training camp's going on this week. Lamar's there, all that stuff. You can find it in Luke's locker room, and we have a new audio vault at Baltimore Positive. And Jessica Vallis from Hartford Design is going to be joining us at Costas. I'm wearing my Costas shirt. Had some big fat crabs there along with the Grayson Rodriguez 5 innings and no-hit ball on Sunday. We're back there next Thursday before this Yankees sweep. I'll say that out loud. Somebody's going to be sweeping somebody. But maybe Thursday will be 2-0 or 0-2. I don't know. Either way, it'll be a big game next Thursday. It's coming out to Costas and join us. That is next Thursday, the 20th. And then on the 25th, which is Tuesday, we're going to be at Pappas Pub in Parkville. The old school Pappas. Taylor Avenue over in Parkville. None of that Cockeysville. No Glen Burnie. No Bel Air. They had a really good golf tournament on Monday. Got some perfect weather as well. So big month ahead. Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by Liberty Pure Solutions and our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare. Big appreciation to Wise Markets as well. Another annual sponsor. We don't give them enough love. We say it's Wise. I got to talk about rewards. I got to get some ice cream. I got two specialty ice creams downstairs. I got the coconut chocolate. It says limited edition on it. And then my favorite's the butterscotch swirl. So that's all going on this month at Wise Markets, too. So get your reward points. So you get your ham, or in this case, hot dogs and hamburgers for the 4th of July. I am Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. These Wise conversations continue right after this.